Deuteronomy 23. No one who has been emasculated by crushing or cutting may enter the assembly of the Lord. No one born of a forbidden marriage, nor any of his descendants, may enter into the assembly of the Lord, even down to the tenth generation. No Ammonite or Moabite or any of his descendants may enter into the assembly of the Lord, even down to the tenth generation. For they did not come to meet you with bread and water on your way when you came out of Egypt, and they hired Balaam, son of Peor, and from Petor, and from Aram Naharim, to pronounce a curse on you. However, the Lord your God would not listen to Balaam, but turn the curse into a blessing for you. Because the Lord your God loves you, do not seek a treaty of friendship with them as long as you live. Do not abhor an Edomite, for he is your brother. Do not abhor an Egyptian, because you lived as an alien in his country. The third generation of children born to them may enter the assembly of the Lord. When you are encamped against your enemies, keep away from everything impure. If one of your men is unclean because of a nocturnal emission, he is to go outside the camp and stay there. But as evening approaches, he is to wash himself, and at sunset he may return to the camp. Designate a place outside the camp where you can go to relieve yourself. As part of your equipment, have something to dig with, and when you relieve yourself, dig a hole and cover up your excrement. For the Lord your God moves about in your camp to protect you and to deliver your enemies to you. Your camp must be holy so that he will not see anything indecent and turn away from you. If a slave has taken refuge with you, do not hand him over to his master. Let him live among you wherever he likes and in whatever town he chooses. Do not oppress him. No Israelite man or woman is to become a shrine prostitute. You must not bring the earnings of a female prostitute or a male prostitute into the house of the Lord your God to pay any vow, because the Lord your God detests them both. Do not charge your brother interest, whether on money or food or anything else that may earn interest. You may charge a foreigner interest, but not a brother Israelite, so that the Lord your God may bless you in everything you put your hand to in the land you are entering to possess. If you make a vow to the Lord your God, do not be slow to pay it, for the Lord your God will certainly demand it of you, and you will be guilty of sin. But if you refrain from making a vow, you will not be guilty. Whatever your lips utter, you must be sure to do, because you made your vow freely to the Lord your God with your own mouth. If you enter your neighbor's vineyard, you may eat all the grapes you want, but do not put any in your basket. If you enter your neighbor's grain field, you must pick kernels with your hands, but you must not put a sickle to his standing grain.
What did you learn?
Well, the interesting thing is in verse 15, this would tend to work against the argument that a lot of folks in the South during leading up to the Civil War had.
Yes, that is correct.
I also find it interesting because, like it talks about entering your neighbor's vineyard, and you can eat, you can sample the grapes, but you can't get a basket and take a bunch of them home with you. Or the same thing with the grain, you can basically sample plucking the heads with your hand, but not, you know, cultivating them and taking like a bunch of it. Kind of reminds me, because like in the grocery store, they used to not make a big deal. Like if you went to the grocery store and you're looking at the bin of walnuts or the, you know, thing of grapes, that if you just took one, it tasted to make sure they were still good, nobody raised an eyebrow. But nowadays, a lot of times, They'll charge you with shoplifting if you taste a grape or if you taste a walnut to make sure it's still good.
That's true. That's nowadays it's changed.
That's why you have to be sneaky.
Hi, Rose.
Hey!
Hi, Rose.
All right. Jeff.
Yeah, you know, verse 1 is something that has been used and circulated quite widely around the internet and even ended up on popular TV as a common derision against God and the fact that the Torah is anything to be taken seriously.
Not to take seriously or to take it seriously?
It shouldn't be taken seriously.
Shouldn't be taken seriously, yes. It's even Jewish teachings. I really was surprised when I did my own research on this particular subject matter. Okay? You know, the reason is because remember what Judas said about eunuchs? You know, he still stands on those grounds. He's not going to change that point. And, of course, you have to know the story behind the story of why he said that to his apostles when they were, had to do about having a wife. Remember? So you better having a wife. And if you can't, understand this thing, he's talking to his apostles, then why don't you become a eunuch? Because you have to, respond to your wife and be proper. And they didn't want a divorce. No divorce. They had divorce under any reason. And he says, no, there's only one reason for divorce. If you divorce for any other reason, you don't understand it, become a eunuch. You can't understand it. So his apostles, he was talking to his teachers, his students, and he wasn't talking to the general public. It's pretty strong. Now, when this has to do, what?
Where is that found in the?
I think it's in Matthew. I didn't write it down. Now, when you look at commentaries about the verse 1, now it's not talking about somebody who has been in an accident. All right.
Or battle.
Or in battle. We're talking someone who did it deliberately. Now, the research that I have seen on it and understood from it is that it was a religious thing which took place in the land of Canaan. All right? And so we would not think about doing that, but for them, it was a religious concept. We'll get on to that a little bit today. Because it's very important, first part of this chapter, in dealing with things that has unusual commandments. And then you're kind of sitting out there and not knowing why. All right? Yes?
I have a question also about number 2. One of the illegitimate births shall not enter the assembly of the Lord, even to the 10th generation. None of his descendants shall enter the assembly of the Lord. Would like to find what exactly that means, because and I know things have changed.
99% of people would never obey there, right?
Right. The thing of it is, it's more so it's illegitimate.
All right, Jeff, I want you to read the last verse in chapter 22.
Last verse.
22.
Deuteronomy 22:30. A man is not to marry his father's wife. He must not dishonor his father's bed.
All right. In the Hebrew text, that's verse 1. All right. So now we have something here kind of associating with this picture. So what do you have that's taking place in verse 1 in the Hebrew text or in the last verse in 22? What did he say? What's he talking about?
Incest.
All right. So the subject matter, we'll get into there. We'll cut this. This is just a brief highlight. But yes, Daniel.
That's the same. That's the reason why he uses the same wording for Ammon and Moab.
Yes.
They're both descendants of incest.
Yes.
So the exact same wording, back to back.
To understand.
The issue of illegitimate birth and the issue of incest with Ammon and Moab is certainly a legitimate thing. Because you do see that that's in the context of why the maybe the Ammonites and Moabites, even to the 10th generation, they are not part of Israel. But he also goes on to say here, they also did not meet with them.
They did not meet with food and water. That was the grounds.
But also David's question about illegitimate birth, we throw around that term illegitimate very loosely in our culture.
What's the Hebrew word?
Mamzer.
Yeah. Right, okay.
Which, you know, in our culture, we think illegitimate is, oh, some 16-year-old girl and some 17-year-old boy get together and they make a baby, and that's illegitimate because they're not married.
That's not what I'm talking about. Okay, now what does it talk about then?
It's talking about basically what Daniel was implying. It's a child that's conceived out of a relationship that is against the Torah.
Whether against
it's a
the Torah.
Relationship
now,
a
yes,
relationship
we will.
Relationship or something like that.
Yeah.
Do you understand all that? What you just saying?
Yeah, but today it's understood in the Jewish community, if a Jewess marries a Gentile,
correct,
their child is a mamzer.
Correct. That's in the Halakhic law, though.
Yeah.
That's not written in the in the Torah.
Yeah.
It's a product of a relationship that would never be allowed in Torah, whether it's a brother and a sister, or like a father and a stepmother, or a married woman with an unmarried man, this kind of thing. That would be an illegitimate child.
All right.
A Jew and a Gentile are having a child. That child cannot go into the temple.
No, he would be considered a mamzer. Same as if a Jewish man refused to divorce his wife, give her a get of divorce.
Okay, let's.
If she had a child by another man, that child's a mamzer too.
Right. Now, we have to keep preparing what it says here. Keep your words careful when you read it. All right? Now, it says here, they are not to be entered into the assembly of Yahweh. Now, where they live, they do their job, and they can live in the community, they can do what they do, but they're not allowed to go to the assembly. When and what are the assemblies of God?
It would be the three holy days.
I'm sorry, what?
The Sanhedrin.
Sanhedrin.
Or the equivalent, being a judge. Or...
Wouldn't it be the three times in a year when all the males are required to come up before the Lord?
So the leadership.
What's the word? Is it Kahal or is it Ada?
I didn't look that one up.
Okay, but if that's important, for example,
because assembly,
Ruth was a Moabitess.
Correct. Okay, now one thing about Ruth, though, what was her number of generation? She was the 10th one.
Ah.
Okay. Now, when Judah had incest with Tamar, 10 generations later, who was born? Who?
I don't know. Did you say Ruth? Didn't you just say Ruth?
David was born, the king of Israel.
Oh.
All right. So, God says 10. He has a 10. And the 10 always does not mean what we think it means. Remember I told you the 10 commandments? Then there's 10 plagues. Then there's 10 times you have troubled me. 10 seems to be a very significant number with God. It's not always necessarily the best picture. It winds up being, I have drawn the line. This is it. Beyond that, there's nothing else. All right, so 10 is kind of a fascinating number when you start reading about these things and knowing. It's like the 10th commandment is the bottom one. This is it. You go beyond this one, there is no 11. All right, so he got 10 is very fascinating with God. But I want to go on to this word where the root word of manzar is to alienate. That's the root word, is to alienate. All right, so the person is being alienated. How does a child become alienated? Well, under incest, it's a big one. Now, we need to go so we understand something about God. When it comes to certain kinds. Now remember, they're going into the promised land. Remember this. It's not that the Israelites were practicing this. It's not the Israelites were doing this. Book of Leviticus. Turn to Book of Leviticus and the 18th chapter. It gives you an idea of basically what it is all about. All right? Then the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel, and say to them, I am the Lord your God. According to the doings of the land of the Egypt, where you dwelt, you shall not do. And according to the things of the land of Canaan, where I am bringing you, you shall not do, nor shall you walk in their ordinances. So now, we see a picture here real quickly. You coming from a land of Egypt. I don't want you to do what you did back then or what they did. And now you're entering into the land of Canaan, and I don't want you to do what the Canaanites do. Now, here he's listing several things that the lands of the citizens of the land of Canaan were doing. None of you shall approach anyone who is near to kin to him to uncover his nakedness. I mean, have sexual relationships with. the nakedness of your father or the nakedness of your mother, you shall not uncover. She is your mother. You shall not uncover her nakedness. Now, that what was going on in the land of Canaan. It wasn't going on in the house of Israel. But now when we get into this point, now you're going to cross and over. Now, Moses at the end of his life, right? He's given them the last bit of information, last bit of commands. After 40 years being in the wilderness, he's repeating in a nutshell what God wants. All right?
He doesn't mean to see them literally uncovered. He means to have relations with them?
Yes, that's all it remains for.
I'm sorry. I mean,
yeah, it's an old saying, but that talk about sex, having downright any kind of sexual contact. The nakedness of your father's wife you shall not uncover, it is your father's nakedness. The nakedness of your sister, the daughter of your father, or the daughter of your mother, born in the house or elsewhere, their nakedness you shall not uncover. That was going on in the land of Canaan. All right? We'll see this before the end of this chapter. The nakedness of your son's daughter, or the nakedness of your daughter's daughter, the nakedness you shall not uncover, for there is your own nakedness. The nakedness of your father's wife, the wife's daughter, begotten by your father, she is your sister, you shall not uncover her nakedness. You shall not uncover the nakedness of your father's sister, she is near kin to you, your father. You shall not uncover the nakedness of your mother's sister, for she is near kin unto you, to your mother. You shall not uncover the nakedness of your father's brother. You shall not approach his wife, nor for she is your aunt. Maybe we call her, sometimes we call her, you know, if I have an uncle, he's married to that woman, I call her an aunt, although she's not my blood. He says, no, you're related to her. Now you're related. All right, it's a simple thing. You shall not uncover the nakedness of your daughter-in-law. She is your son's wife. You shall not uncover her nakedness. You shall not uncover the nakedness of your brother's wife, which is your brother's nakedness. Now, we don't think of those things. Now, we look at these things. Don't we read more? Let's go on to verse 20, 24. I don't want to read all those things off. Do not defile yourselves with any of these things, for by all these the nations are defiled, which I am casting out before you. And you read these things within this particular chapter, they're all about incest. All right? And so now we go back to Deuteronomy, and we see that he's got it in a nutshell. He wraps it up in a few words, all right, about not having any relationship with someone who is near kin to you. And basically, when you have the first verse there in the Hebrew writings about do not do this to your father's wife, all right, what happens if she has a baby? The baby is cursed.
Confused.
Because you brought forth a curse unto the family. You came cursed unto the name. The child has no inheritance. He cannot inherit anything. He owns nothing. He can't own a land. He can't own property. He can't own anything. And for 10 generations, there's nothing there that son who was not responsible for it. But, so you know what, you take a look at the Word of God, and say, is God tough? The answer is yes. Why is God tough? Because if he wasn't, he'd have to vomit them out. He has to eliminate them as he did the Canaanites. All right? Does that kind of explain a little bit?
It also explains the seriousness. Was it Ham who uncovered Noah's naked?
Actually, his son did the uncovering. Cain is the one that did it.
With Noah.
Yes.
That's after the flood.
Yes.
Which is back then to pre-flood conditions, that sexual impurity, uncleanness, which is entering the land again.
Right, and it came through that line.
Yeah.
Well, see, even the Egyptians are of the line of Ham. And God said, in the third generation, they're allowed to become part of it. So not all of Ham's children were evil. Just one of them began the incest.
Right. And it would also speak of homosexuality as well.
That's right.
Right.
You see that in that chapter. It's also in the 20th chapter of Leviticus. We won't go there today. Talk about saying those two chapters are parallel to one another about this kind of conduct. So we look at that chapter 23 here in the book, and we find about this illegitimate child. It's not just an illegitimate child. It's from one that is from an incestual situation, even though it may not appear incestual to us. But to God, yes, it does. It's one of those statutes, right? Or ordinances, he called them. He doesn't call it a statute. He actually calls it an ordinance. It's a little bit different than statutes. All right?
In verse 1, I know you've already passed it up, but if this man wanted to marry and the woman was okay not to have relations with him, could he still get married?
Well, verse what?
Verse 1 of 23. It says he's wounded in his stones and has... Can a eunuch marry?
I have to read that in this one. I don't... I don't have anything about him being married.
It's not. She's just asking the question.
I'm just asking if a woman were okay not to have relations, could he still marry? You're telling me to go off and be a eunuch, that he should go live alone somewhere. But if there was a woman...
class is married if you don't actually...
I don't. Yeah. I mean, we're doing something God has created. You're literally damaging it for... Remember, this was for what the Canaanites did. Not that, you know, and so you're deliberately doing this. All right? Yes.
Yeah, like Richard is saying, Rose, this is a man who was chosen for pagan religious duties to emasculate himself. This is not a man who got wounded in war something like that. And so you can't, you know, God doesn't want a man who has done that to be in any kind of leadership position among the people.
Period.
Right.
Okay.
This isn't about marriage. This
is not about marriage. This is
about leadership.
This is more about leadership, about functioning in the community and being an elder in the community.
Okay.
That someone who has purposely done this to himself. You don't want to have being an elder in your community or being a leader in your community. This isn't about whether he could ever get married or have a happy life.
Yeah, subject matter, not that.
Okay.
Yes.
What about the Ethiopian eunuch then?
What about him?
I mean, you know, it seemed like he was the leader. He went back to his country and became a leader, did he?
No, he wasn't a leader. He was a servant.
So he just of
the queen.
To Sheba or whatever.
Yeah, he was a servant of the queen.
But they have positions of high authority. They did.
Yes, they did.
It wasn't just a servant.
Right.
I mean, he was an ambassador for the queen. It was very, regarded as very important people.
But it was a pagan society, not an Israel society.
So he would have been castrated as a child and dedicated to that. But that Ethiopian eunuch can now come to know Yeshua. Well, there's no reversing that process.
You can't reverse it.
No. Now, looking at what men do today doing vasectomy, does that have any correlation at all?
Well, I have not looked at that one. That's an interesting subject matter. I never looked at it from that point of view.
You know,
so these are basically, in the Greek talk, in Hebrew, it's talking about the testicles.
Yes.
Being cut off. Yes. They do that to animals.
Yeah, vasectomies blocks or cuts
the semen from...
Right. Like the two.
It cuts off life.
Right. So.
Right.
The sex act is supposed to be only for creating the godly seed. I mean, you know. The main.
That's an interesting statement. I've never looked at it. I've looked at Jewish thinking on that.
Yeah. Well, very often happened, all of the male genitalia were removed.
Yeah.
It's all to do with, the mutilation of the body and the holiness and sacredness of it, and the sexual act, which meant procreation from one generation to the other. Yeah.
All right. We got to move on. Yes.
Yeah. Just, you just have to keep in mind here that this is not like, if you lose the context, you start going off on a rabbit trail. This is not talking about all time for all people. Again, this is talking about people who did this for a specific pagan reason. This is not just for any time, someone getting a vasectomy or this or the other. This is about someone who was living a life that was like completely in 180 degrees away from God. And they did that because of that rebellion against God.
Yeah. All right, is that kind of, that's a good explanation.
Yeah. Thank you.
I'll like that one.
So the first three chapters is pagan.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, so the first three verses is pagan in
actually, probably a whole bunch of it is, because Balaam is mentioned there. He says, you seek out, you shall not abhor the Edomite. No, that's a little different story. No, just the first part is going to be just that section. That's correct. Well, there's a lot of it God wants you not to do. But, you know, Daniel's gone through the book of Joshua, right? He's gone through the book of Judges. What did he say? These are the ones that were taught. They understood the Torah, what it said. But when they started carrying out, did it work sometimes for them? Yeah. When they didn't work on it, guess what happened? They have to pay a price. And that's the same thing. You know, we are just like them in a lot of ways, aren't we?
Yeah.
We have to look at it and say, oh, this is what it said. Oh, I didn't pay attention to it before. Well, now I better pay attention to it. Because once that now is there. But does it mean you can't reverse it? Okay, you can't reverse it back. It's impossible. Okay. Well, I wouldn't say it's impossible. I don't know what doctors things do. Cut off somebody else when he's dead and, you know, everything's transplanted these days.
Yeah. I think it's interesting to remember the focus on sexuality in ancient pagan worship.
Yeah,
because
that's
all about fertility, because without fertility, the whole tribe would die out.
And that's so the reason why you have Easter and Ishtar and the egg and the rabbit. You got all that kind of stuff, relationship.
And
that
I was telling the ladies on Thursday at the Bible study, they've actually uncovered little stone idols carved in stone that had on its picture of a woman with many breasts, which is Asherah, and it actually has carved on them to Yahweh and his Asherah. They have literally been found. So that's how they mixed it. It was mixed.
And that was wrong, and God told them not to do that.
That's exactly right, yeah.
Okay, I'm just going to get me on to one more thing here. I think, I don't think it said in this chapter. Let's go back here to Leviticus. I just read that this morning. I forgot where we're at now. Oh. And what Jesus just got you saying. Okay. Now listen very carefully what it says here in the 18th chapter of Leviticus. All right.
18th chapter.
Back to the 18th chapter again. Because what we're doing, what she just got you saying is that underneath it, it said unto what?
It was to Yahweh.
Now listen very carefully to this one, because now look, he says, verse 21, and you shall not let any of your descendants pass through the fire of Moloch, nor shall you profane the name of your God, for I am Yahweh. Don't slap my name on those functions.
And they didn't.
I'm not associated with it. But you see, what she was talking about right now, the word Yahweh is well known. Okay, was it an unknown name? Well known. So even the pagan society in Canaan had, guess what? They knew what that name was, and they would use it. All right?
Yeah. The Israelites made these things.
Yeah, the Israelites would have done it too.
For example, Rebecca, was it Rebecca?
Well,
Rachel,
they did.
Rachel, who sat on her father's household god,
right.
the teraphim, I think they were called.
Something like
that's what they were. That's what they were.
I have no doubt
that
about
was
that.
Was her punishment that she was? That she sat on fertility gods. Her punishment was she was infertile.
Yeah.
She couldn't have kids. She fell on it.
Something else.
And lied that she was on her period.
Okay. I'm sorry, what?
Where are we at?
I went to Leviticus, the... we're still in Deuteronomy 23.
Okay.
But I went to Leviticus to explain something about the very beginning part of 23.
This is very good.
Basically, I deal with incest. Okay, and you got the 18th chapter of Leviticus, and the 20th chapter of Leviticus talking about incest, which God finds and despises and hates. Cause of abomination. That includes, by the way, any kind of sexual relationship with an animal.
Say what?
Any kind of sexual relationship with an animal.
Oh, okay.
Hey, it's quite common. Also,
bestiality.
I'm sorry. I know it. Our country is becoming so bizarre.
Absolutely.
It's heading, living like ancient Canaan.
It is.
I don't mean worshiping other gods. I mean doing the sexual things. It's going to be a curse.
Do you think it happens in this country?
Okay, let's go on with 23 here. Any more subject matter? I got to see if I can't wrap something up here. Now, it's funny, when he goes to war, what does God want you to do?
Dig a hole.
There is the stuff. You know, that's that very, very interesting thing. But now, why would he want that?
Because he walks in their midst.
Because he walks in the midst. Now, when God's not walking in the midst, nothing you can do to deliver you out of it. Because God says, I want it to be clean.
Yes.
You know, I don't want to smell it. I don't want to see it. I don't want to step in it. I was told maybe many years ago by somebody. I said, "Oh, now that would make a real big point. Don't want to step in it."
Where are you reading at now?
That's the ninth verse. When you go against your enemy, keep yourself from every wicked thing.
Okay.
When you go in to fight your enemy, keep yourself away from every wicked thing, including making sure you clean up the mess.
Stop being a smart people.
So, you know, what's kind of interesting is that kind of connected with the separating yourself from practices of people around you.
Yes.
You know, bestiality is just like a sense of, like, okay, that's what all the animals do, just whatever you feel like you do it, you know. It's like, no, you are not an animal.
You're not an animal. You're created in my image, not in that image.
Yeah. So animals just drop it wherever they want to.
That's right.
You're not an animal.
That's correct.
We've lost track of that because of evolution.
Yep.
The teaching of evolution, that we're just barely above the animals, rather than God's teaching that... You are beyond, you're not just an animal, you are way above the animals. You're supposed to have dominion over them, not act like them and emulate them.
I have an indelicate question.
Have a what?
Indelicate question. Indelicate. You can't pray on when you're on the toilet.
That's good.
Is that true?
No, I will. Jeez. I guess it depends, but if you're very painful, you got agony, and maybe a real person, you know, oh God, please, we go. I don't know. That's an interesting question, but oh, I thought about that part. I never thought about that, period. That's kind of cool. That was cool. That was, I never thought about that. That's interesting. Yes, Josh.
But, you know, she does bring up a very interesting point. It's about kind of the idea of respect towards God, you know, because in the modern world, we've gotten to this kind of thing. It's like, oh, you know, hi, God, how are you? You know, yeah. Just kind of just think it's like talking to your friend, you know, when you're really approaching the creator of the universe. So
yeah.
It does kind of get to that idea that, okay, yeah, you've gone to the past the point of being like alien from God, but in the sense that you also have to realize who it is that you're talking to here.
Yeah.
You're talking to someone who doesn't actually hate you anymore, but you're still also talking to the creator of the universe here. So,
not Buddy Jesus.
Yeah. It was funny. That reminded me of a story of, this was decades ago. There was a young minister learning to be a minister. He probably was only in his early 30s, maybe late 20s. He was assistant learning the ropes. And so he had to go to the bathroom. Of course, he's going to take the Bible and read it. And guess where it fell?
Oh.
He thought for sure he's going to have a bolt of lightning come against him. And the reason why he said that is because he wanted to let people know. No, you just put the Bible away. Don't even walk in that room with anything like that. It was funny in one respect, because he didn't know whether he should wait for the killing or what, when the bolt of lightning coming. And of course, he had to throw his Bible away. But it was kind of funny of by itself. But, when she brought that rocket up, that he mentioned that, it reminded me of the story.
Yeah, Jews have a lot to teach us. They treat the Tanakh with great respect.
Right,
they would never take it in. They would never just toss it on the back of their car seat like we do. It's accorded the greatest respect.
Arabs too, they don't want it on the floor.
Well, because you have to realize what it is that we have sitting here.
Yeah.
I mean, with all the confusion that goes on in the world about, what is God, who is God, and this and that.
Okay, we're up on a...
I mean, here we have, right here, God revealed himself to us.
Well, guys, move on, though, okay? That's kind of a funny story, but we won't go any farther. Let's go on to, I'm just kind of stick with this thing. 17th verse. What do you think?
I think that's a good thing. Keep them out.
Why?
Deuteronomy or Leviticus?
Deuteronomy. Back to Deuteronomy.
Which verse is it? In the Hebrew or in the Hebrew Bible or in the other one? Is it about the one about the cult prostitutes? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Okay, so that's verse 18 in the Hebrew. Okay.
Yeah, there shall be no whore or the daughters of Israel, nor a sodomite of the sons of Israel. You shall not bring the hire of a whore or the price of a dog into the house of the Lord thy God for any vow, for even both of these things are an abomination unto the Lord thy God.
All right.
The dog is a male whore.
Yes.
Kind of reminds me of an incident that happened when I was in college. I went to a private college, private university, and private universities are a lot more expensive than state university. And like a couple of years before I was a freshman, this guy actually robbed a bank to pay his school tuition. Now that obviously isn't maybe to the degree of abomination of this, but it's almost the same idea. Don't do something that God doesn't want you to do to fulfill a vow of money to the Lord. You don't steal from somebody to give to the Lord, and you don't do stuff that he specifically tells you not to do, and then turn around and try to make it better by giving the money to him.
Especially,
It doesn't cover. The vow does not cover it.
Yeah.
Especially,
okay, you got a commitment to God. You made a vow to God. You don't use any other source other than what he said what to use.
Yeah.
Right.
Other than the fact that the shrine prostitute thing is related to pagan worship, so it shouldn't be happening in the temple to begin with.
That's correct, yes.
So.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but see, in the land of Canaan, there was called temple prostitutes. Remember that?
Sure.
Very, very common. And basically, he's aiming the subject matter in that direction. All right? You don't do that. Front of me. You don't do that kind of act. And if you're going to be a prostitute, don't want you to be, but if you're going to act like a prostitute, you're going to sell your body, don't use the money to honor me.
Mm. Right.
Because it's an abomination to me. I abhor it.
Mm-hmm.
You can't stop it when it happens. But if it does happen, guess what? Don't use it for anything godly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, because it's just like with verse 1 talking about people who have emasculated themselves.
Yeah.
That you, just like a clear line, you cannot mix these two practices together. You just can't dabble with one or the other. So that if you're involved in that kind of a lifestyle, don't think that you can just, you know, shift from one to the other, just pick a little here, pick a little there.
All right, let's move on to another section. I got about 10 minutes here, so I want to see if I can wrap this chapter up. How about loaning money?
Not to charge interest.
I'm sorry, what?
Not to charge interest to a brother.
When do you charge interest?
You don't know.
I'm sorry, what?
To foreigners.
You can.
Foreigners.
You can if you wish.
No, wait, stop and think what this subject matter is about. They're going into the land of Canaan as a nation of Israel. Within the nation of Israel, one tribe cannot charge interest to another tribe if that tribe needs any kind of financial help whatsoever. However, outside of the house or outside of that country, you can charge interest to somebody who is not associated with your country. Now, we take this on an individual basis, which each one of us is trying to do, and that also works just well, too. Now, what is the difference between when you buy a house and you're paying interest? Compare, yes, Daniel.
Well, the difference being, who are you buying the house from? A bank. There's a big difference between a bank and a neighbor.
Right. Now, when you loan money...
I'm running that bank.
When you, wait. Stop.
And it's not an individual. For example, a bank, and the Bible does not say anything against this. If I loan money to a business, as a business, my business loans money to this business, that's a transaction that has interest. Who cares? It's not an issue.
It's called investment.
I'm not giving you $1,000 because you need to eat this month and you have no money, and I'm going to charge you 10% on that.
Can't charge food, and you can't charge
certain
money.
It's almost like a... Oh, I can't really explain it very well, but it's a way in which you view another human being that is at one with you, that is one of you. You do not gouge as you would treat others as you have them treat you, the same process. You don't do such things. It's ungodly in what he explicitly points out here. I do know that in Judaism, they look at it not that you're not to charge interest, you're not to charge excessive interest. That's how they choose to look at it that way, which may or may not be right. I don't really know. But... So, a mortgage, you didn't buy your house from me if I was selling it to you. Actually, technically, you bought it from the bank who now owns it. Because I already gave you the house, right? The house is yours. You're living in it. But the bank says, well, they're going to take it from you if you don't keep paying them their monthly payments. Well, that's between you
and the
business,
bank, right.
Not between you.
Now, the difference in a house is you're going to have, it's an investment, and you're going to have a return.
Hopefully.
Well, you should have a return. Well, unless you made a bad investment. All right.
Well, now the housing market, you know, is down.
Yeah, well.
If you made a bad investment, that's still a bad investment, and you still made a bad investment. I mean, you can't get out of that part, all right? But there's a difference in the cost about loaning interest or loaning funds or loaning food. You listed food as well, right? It's interesting. Both money and food are listed. Now, how do you charge interest in food? Well, I guess if you gave them a barrel of pickles, you get a barrel of pickles plus more if you really like pickles.
But, you know, if the gift of the land was a gift from God, and that God is going to make things grow and this and that and the other, you're basically taking God's investment and making money on it if you're doing it amongst your own brethren.
That's why he said, take usury. Remember he told the one that only had one?
Why didn't you give it to the bank and get usury out of it? You know, at least do something with a thing out of it. But that's in that case. You could have given it to a foreigner. At least they charged the foreigner some money. All right, now I want to get clarify this statement because there's something very fascinating about this phrase here in the 20th verse. Why? I just want to know if you have the answer of why.
Why can we charge foreigners
interest? Why do not charge, do not, just, but in your brother you will not charge interest. Why?
Well, it doesn't have to do with
what does it say? What does it say? What does it say?
That the Lord your God may bless you in all to which you set your hand in the land which you are entering to possess.
Which land you're in. Now this is the point of act of what? Act of faith. Do you believe God? He said, if you don't charge your brother, I'm going to bless you. Well, you know, it's real difficult for us to see a blessing from God because, see, if I gave you $1,000, just needed it, I want a blessing tomorrow. Hey, it may not come for 7 years. Right? It could happen that way. And all, and we don't look at it that God says, I'm going to test your, this is the test of faith, by the way. This is one of the biggest tests of faith you'll ever have. If it really comes down to it, and you say, I'm going to loan you the money, and I'm going to believe God. There was God, in a sense, pays the interest. Okay? He's paying you the interest when you give food out or give money out. That's a promise from God. Yes, Daniel.
There's also something which most people don't usually pay too much attention to. Interest causes inflation.
Inflation.
So if I, God, give you something that is worth XYZ amount, and over the next 200 years, that XYZ amount is now completely different, which you can no longer afford it because of inflation has made so. Had you not been charging interest, and no one been charging interest in that territory from beginning of time till now, it would be its exact same value.
Same value. See, according to the 7-year cycle, you return the value, it comes back to the value which was at the temple.
The original dollar value.
Original dollar. It has to be readjusted back down to its original money. That's another book of Leviticus we're out there today.
There's an interesting note here, Richard. It says that this is predicated on an agrarian society of brothers in which loans are extended as a form of temporary charity. The ban may not have included properly mercantile loans, as it was not generally applied as Israelite society became more fully urbanized. Foreigners can be required to pay interest because the paradigmatic case would be foreign merchants traveling amongst the Israelites for business purposes. So as an agrarian society, right. I suppose while you're waiting for your... I mean, we've seen it in this country, if you need seed money, yeah. Right?
Yeah, the difference that back then compared to now, there was no bank. There was no economic service controlled by Federal Reserve. Okay, no government came out and said this is the value it's going to be. It was always based upon what was available then and there and now. You know, since God says I own all the gold anyway, what's your problem?
Except when they started setting the rate for the temple shekel. That was set and it was standardized.
That's right. But see, God set that up. Okay, I want to get... this is where we always have heard, you know, where a man should be a man of his word. Well, it has to do association with something else, though. It has to do association that when you say something to God, you had better fulfill it. You knew it was in his name, and you say, I swear to you that I will do this on the name of, and rattle off his name, or his title, or his position, or you want to call him creator, everything else on the sign. But you start using anything that implies him, you had better carry it out. Now, he says now, if you don't do any vows, that's okay. But your mouth must speak it. Now, today we have to have a bunch of legal pieces of paper. It's not signed, sealed, right, with a thumbprint. And what else do you have to have? Social Security number. And what else do you have to have? Everything under the sun. License. All the, you can't get anything. They don't care what you say. If it's not written down, it's null and void. Well, that's the law of our country. I don't have nothing against that. But with God, it's what comes out of your mouth. That's a direct relationship to Him, right? Everything that proceeds out of the mouth of God, we live by. Mm-hmm. So everything that proceeds out of our mouth, we, like God, should live by.
Yes.
All right, does that make sense? It's the simplicity of that phrase.